And before I get started, they asked me to do a few of our paid commercials. So I'm going to get that out of the way, and then we're going to talk about some interesting subjects on real estate that I was able to dig up as talking points. First things first, let's...
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Haunt and Haunted In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Haunt and Haunted In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So once again, it's 4:04 on the 16th of July. Wish it was January. It'd be a little cooler out. Our temperature right now in scenic downtown Flemington is 90 degrees with 48% humidity. So although it's hot, it's not a hot and humid date. But it looks like that's going to change because tomorrow, Wednesday, we're going to have some rain off and on all day, a little bit into Thursday morning. Tomorrow will be in the 93 to 73 in the evening. It's Thursday, a little rain in the morning, 86 to 68. Friday, sunny again, 93 to 75. And then Saturday, 99 degrees. We could have hit 100 on Saturday, boys and girls. That's not to mess around with. A few more commercials. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Join us for a fun-filled evening at the Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers annual fundraiser, Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Lone Eagle Brewing, 44 Stangle Road, Flemington. Craft beer tasting, great food, door prizes, live music, and a 50-50 raffle. Tickets are $50 each, and sponsorship advertising opportunities are available. Please visit www.crimestoppershunterdon.com or call 908-437-0126. We'll have a barrel of fun.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Hey, so it's Jay Peters. Once again, today is the 16th of July, 2019. The time right now is somewhere about 4:08 p.m., and I'm sitting in scenic downtown Flemington, New Jersey, in 90 degrees weather with 48 degree humidity, which isn't so bad. What I thought I would do this week is go through a bunch of postings I've done over the last month or so that have gotten a lot of attention and sort of to discuss them with you to make sure that you haven't missed out on anything. The first one is 10 steps to buying a home this summer. And that's an interesting subject matter because it seems like there's 110 steps, but somebody has broken down to just 10. So let's say if you go through these things, in effect, you're going to be able to buy a home. First one, save your down payment. Okay, so this probably didn't start a week ago Tuesday. This is something you've been doing for a couple of years. In order to buy a house, you're probably going to need 6% of the purchase price, 3% as a down payment, and 3% to close. So to say that differently, if you're going to buy a $200,000 house, you're going to need about $12,000 in cash in order to do it. The more money you put down, the less your payment will be, but more importantly, your more money you put down, you get closer to 20%. And when you get to 20%, there's no private mortgage insurance. And the private mortgage insurance could run anywhere from 0.4 to 0.8%. So that's a lot of money. But some people say, well, rather than put another 15% down or 17 if you're putting 3% down, maybe I could just leave that in the bank at 8% and get some growth out of it, you know, not at bank rates but stock market rates. There's various thinking there, but you're going to need about 6%. So that takes a while to save. Number two, know your credit score. This is key. And if there's two people, you have to know each other's. Your credit score should be well above 700 in order to be considered a good credit risk. In effect, we can get you a mortgage if you're above 650, but the closer you get to 650, the more interest you're going to be charged in order to get a payment plan that works for you. So, number one, save some money. Number two, know your credit score. Now, let's say your credit score is not what it could be. There are a lot of people, and mortgage guys usually are talking to them every day, who can help you improve the score. Let's say you have too many little accounts open and they all add up to $1,000 or $2,000. Probably a good plan to pay them all off. But, in effect, it would bring you your credit score up maybe 10, 20, 25 points. That's one thing that you can do. Another might be refinancing. In other words, if you've got some credit and very high payback interest rates and you've got open to buy elsewhere, it may make some sense to do a credit consolidation at a lower rate and bring the payment per month down. But I'm not an expert in that field. There are people who do that for a living, and I think getting your credit beat into shape is something that's really key because without it, you're not going to get a good rate. Then you're going to find a real estate agent. Well, I got one I could suggest. He looks just like me and he answers my phone usually. But there are a lot of good real estate agents. What you don't want to do is say, oh, I've got to use my niece or my sister-in-law sells real estate. I'll use her. That doesn't mean they're an expert in your area, and it also doesn't mean they're an expert. They just happen to sell real estate. We have a lot of agents. You know, they call it the Pareto rule where 20% of the people do 80% of the business. In real estate, it's double that. 10% of the people do 90% of the business. You want to get one of the top 10 or top 5 in the office that you've singled out. There's lots of good companies. There's lots of different kinds of companies. I work for Coldwell Banker. It's a full-service agency, as is Coldwell Banker. It's a full-service. Weicker's a full-service. What used to be Prudential, which is now Berkshire Hathaway, is a full service. Then there are other companies that are not exactly full service. And I'm not going to mention them by name, but they're not in the three that I mentioned. And what they do is they may give you a better rate, or they may pay their agents a little more money, but they don't do any marketing. One of the things we do at Coldwell Banker that blows my mind is demographics. We can use big data and tell you where your buyer is going to come from and advertise directly to that buyer where he sits, where I don't think either one of the other two that I mentioned are able to do that. And definitely if you get out of the top three, you're taking some chances. Then you got to get it pre-approved. A lot of times people say, well, I went online and I say to them, did they check your credit? Did they pull your credit score? Did you show them your assets? Well, no, but they're saying I'm qualified. You are not qualified. You're pre-approved. You need to get credit qualified. In order, they need to pull your credit. They need to look at your assets. They need to verify your employment. And all of that takes a credit guy less than an hour with you. And that credit guy or gal will then say, here's where you can purchase up to. Well, let's just make up a scenario. Let's say between the two of you, you're in a nice amount of money, you've got a fairly good amount of credit, you've got a lot of money saved. He may come back to you and say, you could afford up to a $700,000 house. But I see a lot of people saying, I want to make it on just one of the two salaries in case there's an issue. And if that's the case, maybe you only want to buy a $400,000 house. But getting credit approval is important before you get started so you can know where and then start budgeting. And then it's time to go home shopping. So this is where most people want to start. They want to go out and look at some houses. And quite honestly, I do, when somebody approaches me, take them out and show a few houses. But tell them that before we go out again, I need you to talk to our mortgage person. You can use anybody at the end of the day, but talk to ours. He's sitting in house. He's going to get you pre-approved. And he's going to look at your credit score. He's going to look at your assets. He's going to look at your length of employment and give us an opinion. So then we look at a whole bunch of houses. I will tell you the average person looks at 24 to 36 houses before they make a decision. So you can look at about two houses an hour, three if they're like townhouses and they're all together. So that may be three or four trips that you've gone out and you've looked at, let's say, 24 houses, and you have a number one and a number two. And then we say, well, if that number one is really what you want, let's look and see if there are more just like it. And sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't. But you select and you make an offer. Now, the offer is just done in the same fashion that we do when we go to list a house. We do a market analysis on that house in that location. We take a look at the month's supply. We take a look at what are similar to it and that have sold recently. And sometimes we got to add in some values or subtract some values to make a house equal. I mean, there might be one just like yours that is three-car garage, but you only have a two-car garage. We know what to add in or take out to make those equal. Maybe there's one that's got an extra bath in the basement, and you don't. Your basement isn't even finished. We can take a value of a full basement and an extra bath and adjust that to get them equal. And then we say, here's what houses have sold in the last 3 to 6 months, and here's the appreciation that we've seen per month during that period of time, because if a house sold 6 months ago for $500,000 and we're appreciating at 0.5% a month, which would be 6% a year, well, after 3 months, you're up another $15,000. We have to adjust for that as well. Then we come up with the right price. We work out a strategy. We make an offer. Offers always come in lower than the buyer is expecting. So we make an offer, and the buyer has a heart attack. No, I'm not selling it at that price. Well, a lot of people don't realize this is negotiations. You make an offer to see where the seller will come back and say, no, I have my house listed for $500. You just offered me $475. I counter offer at $495. And you make one offer back at $480, and then if for $485, maybe where you settle. It's that kind of a process. But You got to make an offer. You got to come to an agreement in terms. In other words, I will buy your house on this date at this price, and here's what's included. That's an agreement in terms. Once you do that, you got to go talk to an attorney and go through what's called attorney review. In this process, the buyer has his own attorney, the seller has his own, his or her own attorney, and those attorneys are protecting your particular interest. They're making sure that you are represented properly. The first letter they send is 8 pages long with 48 different items on it. It's not like they sit down and drafted up that letter. They pull a letter out of the drawer and they say, okay, this isn't a condo. This doesn't have a septic, but everything else pertains. And we're going to send over 46 of the 48 points. And since he's interested in the age of the roof, we're going to say that that's a concern. And the attorneys know how to draft the letter. Then a letter comes back, and they discount half of the 48 items, and they agree to them, change four more, question a few others. Probably about the third letter, we're down to two or three items. And that's when an agent will typically get the opinion of a realtor, though it's not necessary, and he or she will work with their attorney and say, yes, I'm willing to accept that or not. Then you're out of attorney review. Once you're out of attorney review, that's the very first point you can get the house inspected, unless you agree to a pre-offer inspection. And most people will not do that. A lot of reasons, but it's the point after attorney review you're going to get the house inspected. And that will consist of an inspection of all the items in the house, including structure and electric and plumbing and termite and septic if there is one, and a whole bunch of other things, including radon. If you inspect the house and the seller is not willing to fix one of the deadly sins, and there's about seven of them, termite, radon, septic, structure, plumbing, then the buyer has the right to back out of the deal. The seller has to let them out of the deal and get the money back. If the seller's willing to fix them and the buyer is not in agreement as to how the seller is going to fix them, well, then it becomes an arbitration as such, and the two attorneys work it out. Sometimes it just doesn't work out, but in most cases they come to a fervor agreement in terms, and attorney review is then concluded. Now you're going to get the home appraised. And we really finished attorney review about a step back, but the inspection items are an addendum to the attorney review, and they get considered as part of the contract. Your bank is going to want to appraise the house. In order to make it so that there can be no collusion, the bank has to pick an appraiser at random and get the house appraised. Sometimes the appraiser knows the area very well, and sometimes they don't. But let's say, once again, you bought a $500,000 house, you agreed at $485,000, and the appraiser comes out and says, nope, it's only worth $475,000. Well, then the bank wants somebody to come up with the extra $10,000. And it really depends whether you're in a buyer's market or a seller's market. If you're in a buyer's market, the seller is probably going to pay the $10,000. If it's the opposite and it's a seller's market, the buyer is probably going to pay the $10,000. In a lot of cases, they find some common ground in between where they both give up a little in order to make the deal work. And then there's about a six-week period of getting the mortgage process completed, getting the house repairs completed from inspection, getting ready to move, getting ready to close. They set a closing date. I would say just use as a rule of thumb from the date you make the offer to the date you close is probably about 8 weeks. Used to be about six, thanks to Frank Dodd, who complicated the whole world. It's now like eight because we put a lot of precautions in place. And then you close on the sale. Everybody that's happy for feet and smiles, keys are exchanged, and you're ready to move in. And before that, you've probably made all the plans to get the utilities turned on, the moving company ready to go, and whatever. So if you're thinking of buying a home, you may not know where to start. A lot of people might start at looking at homes. And that is not the right place to start. The place to start is saving some money, knowing your credit, finding an agent, and then getting pre-approved. Then you go home shopping. Once again, a lot of agents like myself will let you look at a few and then say, okay, now we've got to go through the sober process. Here's a simple list of 10 things. We just went through it. Make sure you ask your agent for details about each step and what else may be required in your specific area. So, that's the 10 steps to purchasing. Let's talk about the reasons for owning a home instead of renting. Once again, these are various articles that I've published on my blog. You can find my blog at jpeters.com, J-P-E-T-E-R-S.com. And on the very top navigation bar, there is blog. And under blog, you'll find market reports and you'll find my blog postings. Every morning, I do a posting. Some of them are things like I'm reading. Some of them are things to do this weekend. Some of them are little videos about what's happening in the market. But every morning, there's a posting out there. So people say, well, maybe I should just rent for a while. And here's the arguments for and against renting. Housing is typically one of the best leveraged investments you could possibly make. Let's use the example that I just went through. You're going to put 3% down. That's $6,000 on a $200,000 investment. Well, it's not just the $6,000 that appreciates, but the whole $200,000. So if you got 3% appreciation in the very first year, and that's about average right now, under $400,000 in 100 counties of 3% appreciation, you would get your $6,000 back in equity in the first year. And in the second year, maybe 7 or 8. There's no guarantee it'll keep going up, but it typically does. So at the end of 5 years, at 3% to 4% appreciation, you're going to appreciate somewhere between 15 and 20%. So you buy a $200,000 house, it appreciates 20%, and that's $40,000. So you put 6 down and got 40 back. That's leverage. That's a good return on your money. And one of the things that you've got to consider is that you're paying for a mortgage whether you own a house or not. If you don't own a house, well, then you're paying the mortgage for somebody else. He's not going to rent it for you and to you in most cases for less than he's paying on it mortgage-wise. So what you're going to do is you're going to find that if a person's putting a house up for rent, they're probably putting it up at about a little more than 1% of what its street value is. So if it was a $200,000 house, they'd probably have it rented to you for $2,000 a month. That's the 1% factor. That's where you typically break even as a tenant, as a landlord. You as a tenant pay them the $2,000. Out of that, they pay the taxes, they pay the homeowner's insurance, they pay any repairs that come up. And if you're in a townhouse or condo, they're paying the homeowners association, and then there's some money left, and that's what's getting paid against the principal at the bank. So hopefully they're covering all of their expenses out of the $2,000. But you're making that payment for him, and he's getting a tax benefit from it, and he's getting the appreciation versus making it yourself. Owning a home is usually a form of forced savings. Studies have shown that homeowners have a net worth of 44 times greater than a renter. 44 times. So if you as a renter have $10,000 in savings, a homeowner at 4 times that would have $40,000. So at 44 times, that would have $440,000 versus your $10,000. It's a forced savings. And over just 5 years, it could be $40,000, $45,000 itself. Owning a home is also a hedge against inflation. House values and rents tend to go up at a higher rate than inflation does. So when you own a home, your value will be protected from inflation. Lots of good reasons here. There are still substantial tax benefits in owning. One of the arguments has been that since we doubled the standard deduction, an average house in New Jersey sells for $300,000. $30,000. In Hunterdon County, it's more like $400,000. In Somerset, it's more like $500,000. But at $330,000, since you got your standard rate doubled last year, probably the incentive to purchase a house for a tax incentive has disappeared a little bit. But all the other factors are there. Appreciation, living where you want to live, doing what you want to do to the house. There's a lot of offsets to renting, too. I mean, you probably can't paint the place the color you want to paint it. You can't put up the window decorations the way you want. They don't want that touch. You're renting a place like renting a car. You cannot bring it back a different color. You cannot change the upholstery. You're going to return the car in the condition you found it, and they're going to allow for a little bit of wear and tear, and anything beyond that they're going to take out of your security deposit, which is typically 1.5 months' rent value. So let's talk about buyers in general. This is an interesting article that I read this week, also published. People say, where do you get the information that you publish? Well, I don't make it up. Although I know a lot about real estate and I'm pretty well read, what I do publish, I gather from other sites that I pay a fee to, and they let me use it as content. And then I publish the content. So the question now is your first home within your grasp? You're a buyer. We went through the 10 steps. We went through the rent versus buy. Is your first home within your grasp? And for the longest time, many experts doubted whether millennials age 18 to 36 valued home ownership as part of their American dream. Looking at the latest statistics from the National Association of Realtors, we can see that the old millennials, 25 to 36, are dominating the first-time home or buyer market. And I got to tell you, they would own it outright, not just dominate it, if we had enough houses to sell them. First-time buyers are usually buying in a 150 to free range. We do see it higher because they're waiting to buy and are accumulating more money. But first-time buyers are 150 to 300. Second-time buyers are 250 to 500. And third-time are somewhere a little over 500K buyers. That's the chain. So we haven't built anything new at the low end. So we haven't built any 150 to threes. We haven't built any fours. What we're really building are million-dollar houses, which we'll get to that point, people aren't really looking for. So the percentage of buyers that are first-time home buyers, 100%, 32 years of age. First-time buyers are 100%. Are 32 years of age. Married couples, also 32 years of age. Single females, 35. Unmarried couples, 31. And single males are 33%. 2% of all first-time home buyers do not fit into the categories above, represent the other category. So what we're saying, according to the Census Bureau, millennials are defined as 18 to 36-year-olds. According to NAR's latest profile on home buyers and sellers, the median age of all first-time home buyers is 32%. And more old millennials, the ones that are between 25 and 36, are realizing home ownership is within their grasp. So we're seeing a lot up at that age. So let's look at this from the seller viewpoint a little bit. What if you're ready to sell your house and you say, what would make it sell faster? We talked about the buying side of the equation, and we're going to get back there a little bit more. But from the sell viewpoint, what would make it sell faster? Since the June of last year, we've seen an increase in inventory of our houses each month for the last 6 months, really since the last year. Every spring and every summer, the inventory increases because people want to sell our homes. For those with children, they may want to be in their new home at the beginning of the new school year. And that's true. The market changes right after July 1st because that can't happen anymore. If you're one of those sellers, you may find these four tips helpful. First of all, make the buyers feel at home. Declutter your home. Pack away all the personal items and pictures and sentimental belongings. Make them feel like they belong in the house, not you. And it's a profile of home staging. that is a real art form here that can make the house seem useful by today's standards. 83% of buyers, agents, and said staging a home makes it easier for a buyer to visualize that property as their future home. Not only will your house spend less time on the market, but some reports mention, the same report mentioned that one quarter of all buyers and agents said that staging a home increased the dollar value of the home between 1 and 5%. That's a lot of money, folks. 1 and 5%. So you want to declutter it. What I tell people is, look, you're going to move anyway. Go down and get one of those $100 a month garages. It's not air conditioned. It's not heated. It's waterproof, but it's like a garage. And start taking the stuff that's in the way, that's too good to throw away, or you haven't determined where it's going to go, and put it in that garage. Start moving it there, and then when you move, you'll have the moving company pick it up from there. Make your house look bigger. Make your house look decluttered. Make your house look like it should look for the people who are looking to buy it. Then keep it organized. Since you took the time to declutter it, keep it organized. Before the buyers show up, pick up the toys, make the bed, put away the clean dishes. It's also a good idea to put some cookies fresh from the oven on a scented candle. I don't agree with the cookies because most people won't touch them, but the scented candle does help. Buyers will remember the smell of your home. According to the same report, the kitchen is one of the most important rooms to stage in order for the buyers, and I agree. If you look at the three things that will increase the house value, one of them is curb appeal. They will not buy a house that they can't see their friends driving up and saying, wow, they bought this. Number two, kitchens. Number three, bathrooms. Those are the three items that you need to have your house be competitive with. So declutter, keep it staged, give the buyers full access. I will not take a listing that does not allow me to put a lockbox on it. And by that I mean I need to be able to let an agent get in within a few hours' notice. We always ask for the day before. But, in effect, we want them to have ease of access. I can't be running over to let them in. I have 6 or 8 listings at any one point in time. If I did that, I'd never do anything but run around. We have lock boxes that tell us the time they came in. They told us how long it takes. Took them to look at it so we can tell whether or not they've had interest in a lot of cases. And it gives me the agent's name and phone number so I can call them back later that day. Then the last item, and this is the most key. I mean, you could have done everything else, and if you've got the house price too high, it's still not going to sell. Your buyers are very keenly aware as to what the values are of properties. You are not going to be able to market high and think, well, maybe somebody will pay more. Because, in effect, if you do that, somebody will probably not pay more. They're probably not even going to look at it. And let's just take an example. I listed a house last year that probably should have been listed when we listed it at 500. But the seller wanted to list it at 5 1/4. In effect, he thought he was going to have the buyer pay my commission. That never works. But it's his house. I work for him. I advocate for the seller. And I said, we'll try it for a while, and we'll have to adjust it if it doesn't work. And we did try it for a while, and we did have to adjust it. And by the time we adjusted it, interest rates went up twice, and the adjustment wasn't enough. He never caught up with the market. Quite honestly, the house still hasn't sold, and that listing expired quite a long time ago. So you need to price it right. You need to listen to your agent. You need to get off your duff and get out and look at the competition. I do that with my sellers a lot of times. Let's go look at the 3 or 4 that you're competing against. And if you want to sell your house for the least amount of time, for the best price, with as little hassle as possible, a local real estate professional is a useful guide. Call them today and find out what you need to do in order to sell your house and your market more quickly. So those are the things to keep in mind. Then we talk about prepping or paying the price. And there is a trade-off. I mean, I get a lot of people say, what would happen if I put a new kitchen in? Would I get my money back? The answer is no. You put a new kitchen in or a new bathroom in, and you'll probably get 50-60% of your money back. So the only time that makes sense is if you're going to live in a house for 5 years. And then it's added some value. You've got some value out of it. You're going to break even when you sell it. But if you put a new kitchen in, you're not only going to lose money because it does not add that much value. It will not add the value you paid back to the selling price. But secondly, it's probably not the way the newer person wants it. You're better off taking the money off the selling price and let the newer person put the new kitchen in the way they want it. So prep or pay the price. You're sitting on Saturday morning watching HGTV and drinking your coffee, and when it hits, the urge to paint a room, and it's not going away. Next thing you know, you're dipping the brush into the paint can and slopping the blue hue up on the wall. It'll be all right, right? It'll be fine. It's a scenario we admit to knowing all too well, one which eagerness and adrenaline push the patience of logic aside, not always with the greatest results. But the reality you must face eventually is the right preparation that makes the difference when it comes to painting. For the best job, it always looks like it was done professionally, and these steps are what it takes. First, do a little research. The paint colors are very specific. There are colors that are in and that are people are looking for. They should be neutral, a couple of varying ages. One of the things I try to do with my buyers, I should say with my sellers, is say, let's talk about who's going to buy your house. It's either going to be a young couple moving up for their first house into yours or buying this as a first time, and their tastes are going to be different than yours. Or it could be an older couple getting divorced or that the kids are gone and they're downsizing. So you need to cover those two instances. You may have the upstairs bedrooms painted really nice for the grandchildren, but the people buying it may not have children yet, may not see the need for that decoration. You need to neutralize it. Also, you got to look at it different times of the day because different times of day, the light is different. Find the right colors. You really need a professional. This is where a stager comes in. They not only put some furniture in your house, but they help you pick out the colors. They can get it painted for you. They help you decide what needs to be done with the carpet and flooring. And they, in effect, paint a whole picture. And they typically give you a good, better, best. You can have a good where they do a little bit and you do most of it. So cheapest of the prices, then a better is where they do about half. You do half, and then the whole thing, and the best where they do it all, and you just reap the benefit. And it all comes with a dollar tag. Buy the right supplies. A successful paint job is one which you not only achieve a great result, but you do without running back to the Lowe's 12 times because you forgot something. And I got to admit, getting ready to paint and then cleaning up once you're done is two-thirds of the job. Painting is not so bad. If you could just have somebody put all the stuff out and somebody put all the stuff away and all you do is paint, you'd get 10 times as much done. But it doesn't work that way. And here's what Sherwin-Williams say. You need paint. You need primer. You need stir sticks. You need paint rollers. You need roller covers. You need small paint brushes. You need paint sprays. You need painter's tape, and you need rags. Wow. I guarantee you don't have all of them in your house. If you do, not where you can find them. Or if you do find them, not in a condition that you can use them with anymore. Drop cloths. Buy the good stuff. Painting is one of the least expensive and most effective ways to cover over a space. But it doesn't mean you should buy the cheapest products you can find. Bargain basement paint likely won't give you the coverage you need, and cheap brushes leave brush marks and streaks, bristle points. The spruce has a good guide as to the best interior paints. Brands of brushes, rollers can vary, and by store to store, and be sure to ask the paint specialist which options would be best to cover your own walls. Tape, tape, tape. a tedious, time-consuming pain in the butt, but we're speaking from a personal perspective. To paint over moldings mm-hmm. or baseboards is not a good look. And sadly, we're also speaking from a personal experience here, too. Cover your stuff. Even though you have the gentlest, most even, most professional stroke in the world, splatters still happen. So do drips and spills. Don't take the chance of ruining something to save a little time and getting prepared. Take a good look at your walls. Dings, cracks, other imperfections need to be fixed. Inspect. Use lightweight spackling. Once dry, use a small piece of very fine wall paper, sandpaper, and then wipe the walls clean. You may have to go through it a couple of times. And when you're all done, dust it down before you put the primer and or paint on. I can't tell you how many times I'll walk into a house with a customer and they'll just say, well, this isn't, no, it's not me. And I'll say, well, okay, so I need to tell the seller a little more than it's not me. What doesn't work for you? Well, they've done a poor job in painting. I can see the brush marks, or I can see that they haven't prepared the walls. I'm going to have to repaint the whole thing. Or they've painted it in such an outlandish color, I can't live with it. Those are both very interesting remarks, because you're not going to push your house off with a minimum of effort on a buyer and have that buyer either pay you the price you're looking for or pay you more for it, which is what you're hoping. I mean, let's look at it from both ends. You're a buyer, you're trying to pay as little as possible. You're a seller, you're trying to sell it as high as possible. In between is a gap. And if you've prepared the house properly and they can see themselves living in it the way you've got it prepared, you're going to have a much better job of selling the house, much easier job, than if you haven't done a damn thing and they have to come in and do an entire paint job, and before paint job, maybe some total remodeling. So what you need to do is take a look at it from their viewpoint and, in effect, get your you as a seller, or as a realtor, I have to get my sellers to take reasonable steps in order to get the house to look the fashion it should look in. So we've talked a few things about getting the house ready. Let's talk about properly pricing your house. And this is an interesting point, because you don't set the price. The buyer sets the price. And if you set the price too high, in effect, the buyers won't even come out and look at the house. And if you've set the price just right, you're going to get much more showings up front. So I'm going to go back to the house that was priced at 5.25. Should have been priced at 500 or just under. We didn't have a lot of showings. And by the time they adjusted the price, the market had changed even worse, and it was overpriced even at the adjusted price. So two things you need to know to properly price your home. In today's housing market, home prices are increasing at a slower pace, a little under 4%, than they were over the last 8 years, which was 6-7%. That depends on where you're at and what your price point is, but that's good general numbers. However, if you're still above historical norms, low supply of listed homes and high demand from buyers have pushed some prices up rapidly. In the mind of the homeowner, the annual home price appreciation over 6% has become the new normal. This becomes a challenge when the homeowner looks to refinance or sell their home, and the expectation of what the homeowner believes should be its worth is not only lined up with the bank's appraisal. So in the mind of the homeowner, annual home prices should increase 6%. That's not the case. We haven't seen that in our area in a long time, except for those real hot markets. And we haven't even gotten back to where we were at pre-recession prices. We're still about 10% under it, unless you're in a very popular price point, and then you probably passed it. Or a very popular town to the east, like Bridgewater, and then you're probably past it. Every month, the Home Price Perception Index, HPPI, measures the disparity between what the homeowner is seeking to refinance his home and he believes the house is worth and what the appraiser's evaluation of that same house is. Over the last 5 months, the gap between the homeowner's opinion and the bank's opinion has widened by 0.75 points. It's important that the homeowners to note that even a 0.75 point difference in an appraisal can mean thousands of dollars that a buyer or seller would have to come up with at the closing. And they show you the chart. I mean, we were at 0.33, and we've moved all the way up to 0.78, and we've gone up at least a half a point in the last 12 months on what homeowners believe their house is worth because they've improved it and what the appraiser's actually going to put it up. So the gap is widened. According to Realtor.com, the share of homes that have prices cut by 2% compared to last year, 37 of the 50 largest U.S. housing markets saw an increase in overall price reductions. And I think that's in general. And let's understand the psychology of that. The homeowners are looking to get as much for their house as possible. We talked about that a little earlier. But we're not seeing the price increases that we once saw. Back between 2002 and 2006, we saw prices going up 15%. And then they plummeted. Some of them went down as far as 40% between 2006 and 2008-09. They started coming back up again. And by now, most markets have come within 10% of where they once were, which was an artificial high. And as I said a little earlier, some have surpassed it, depending on location and price point. But in most cases, where we were at the high did not reflect an accurate picture of what the house was worth. It reflected a picture of what people were willing to pay because there was a feeding frenzy going on. And then, boom, the balloon broke, the bubble broke, and as a result, the prices came down. And we're starting to see that right now. We're seeing that we were looking at 4 to 6% increases for the last 4 or 5 years. We're now adjusting down to somewhere between 2 and 3% increases. You're going to see higher under 400K where the popular price points are at. And in Hunterdon County, I would say this. I would say if you're under 400K, you're probably going to exceed the 2 to 3%. If you're between 400 and 600K, you're probably going to average 2 to 3% to maybe, as you get closer to 6, not going up at all. If you're above 600K in home value in Hunterdon County, you're probably going to see a drop. And a lot of people don't want to realize that. They feel that that's happened to the people down the street, not to me. But you're caught up in it. You're caught up in the fact that our birth rate is declining, that we're not having as many children as we used to have, and that people don't want those great big houses that they once wanted. Yet our people in planning and development in each town have jurisdicted with 10 to 20 years ago thinking that we have to build on 1 acre, we have to put up 3,000 square foot. So the houses that are going up are big $8-9 million houses. The houses people want aren't that big and aren't that expensive. So the net result is since we have a lot of used inventory on the market and a lot of new inventory on the market, the new inventory in a lot of instances sells before the used inventory sells because it's new and people will pay a little extra to get new, although there's a lot to go into it. I mean, just to landscape a yard could easily cost you $50,000 and you got to decorate the whole house. But new sells, and as a result, existing home sales, or resales as we call them, diminish. And as they diminish, then they push the prices down below them. And I'll give you a good example. I have a client who has a house that is easily worth $550,000. But he's competing with houses at $575,000 and $600,000 that used to be $700,000 houses that can't sell. So as a result, and the result could be impending need or desire, need being the stronger of the two, people are going through a divorce, going through a job change, have gone through a life change like death, need to sell their house. And in a lot of instances, they need to mark the house down to sell it. And in a lot of instances, they mark their house down so it's only $50,000 more than his natural $500,000. So as a result, that person's had to lower his price to under $5,000 to be competitive with what's on the market. If we get above $700,000 in Hunterdon County, we're sitting with at least 4 years of inventory. Now let me say that backwards. If you have a house in Hunterdon County that's priced above $400,000, it is going to take you at least 4 years on average to sell that house. Now, if you're saying, okay, I can see over $1 million, $1.25 million, people will say, yeah, I understand. But I think the lower you are, the better off you are. We have very little activity in Hunterdon County at $700,000 and above. Last month we sold 4 or 6. It wasn't a lot. And we had 250 on the market. Divide one into the other. That's where this number comes from. So the challenge we have in Hunterdon County right now is to find buyers for the houses that we have for sale. And a lot of the inventory that's come on in the last 6 months, which has helped the inventory situation, has come on in the above $500,000. Giving that price point a lot of competition. So if your price is between $500,000 and $600,000, you better have a really clean house ready to go, and B, the price point pencil really sharpened, because you need both. Clean, ready to go, great price, it happens. So hey, this has been Joe Peters. I enjoy talking to people and understanding what they need to make happen, either as a buyer or a seller. I like to say I help people to achieve their goals and dreams. I've been doing real estate now for over 15 years, and I know Hunterdon and Somerset County really, really well. I've sold multiple hundreds of houses out here. If you'd like to talk about your situation and better understand how you fit in, and maybe you're sitting there today and saying, well, I'm thinking about selling in the spring, probably listed somewhere in the spring, we should be talking right now. Because we need to take a look at your house in a competition. We need to take a look at what you need to do in order to get it ready for market. And we need to take a look at what's going to happen between now and the spring market. And that's a little bit of a crystal ball, but we have a pretty good indication. We're sitting in a really good market. I think it's going to be the best real estate market year over year than we've ever had. I think we're going to see 2019 sell a lot of houses. It's happened already, and it hasn't slowed down. But I think the higher your price point, the more your challenge is. And if you're in the price points that we discussed, or any price point, and you're thinking about selling next year, we should be talking now. We should be talking easily 6 months before it's time to put the house on the market. So if you're thinking March 1st is about when you'd consider doing it, quite honestly, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to do much between now and the end of the year. So we should be talking now so you can start getting a professional opinion and consider what it is you do need to do. My name is Joe Peters. I work with Coldwell Banker. I cover all of Hunterdon and Somerset County, and I'd be more than happy to help you. And on the buy side, the same thing. buyers, we just changed gears because you cannot get a child in school anymore if you buy a house today on the 15th, 16th of July. We're in a market that's really a trade-up or trade-down or trade-sideways kind of market. And it's a little more difficult than it was just 2 weeks ago to sell a house. So buyers are taking advantage of that. And I work with buyers all the time in order to help them not only find a house of their dreams, but at the same time, a lot of them need to sell a house they're in order to make that dream happen. Joe Peters, Coldwell Banker. I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and I will be here next week. Thank you.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Hey, give me a call. It's Joe Peters. See you next week. Thank you.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Go wherever they want, where they can stay. But they should love our country. They shouldn't hate our country. You look at what they've said. I have clips right here. The most vile, horrible statements about our country, about Israel, about others.
President Trump's comments at the White House on Tuesday after a cabinet meeting. Now the House is set to vote on a resolution condemning the president's tweets about four freshman progressive lawmakers. Senate Majority Leader, Republican from Kentucky Mitch McConnell, reminds us of what the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia said.
He said, "I don't attack people, I attack ideas." And I think that's a good lesson for all of us. From the president to the speaker to freshman members of the House, all of us have a responsibility to elevate the public discourse.
On Wall Street, the Dow lost 24 points to close at 27,336. This is USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Defense Secretary nominee Mark Esper is warning about growing international threats from Russia and China. During a Senate confirmation hearing today, Esper also talked about the serious regional threat from Iran and North Korea. Esper was Army Secretary before being tapped as acting defense chief after the sudden departure of Patrick Shanahan last month. The second ministerial to advance religious freedom is underway in Washington, D.C. With more, here's USA Radio Network's John Clements.
Secretary of State Michael Pompeo opened the first day of the event, thanking those in attendance.
I want to thank everyone here who has committed a part of their life to helping those who are persecuted and to defending the unalienable right to practice one's religion and follow their conscience and to take care of their soul.
He called for a global freedom of religion.
All people from every place on the globe must be permitted to practice their faith openly in their homes, in their places of worship, and believe what they want to believe.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
sunset at night, or live in this way. For I am the warmth of the sun. Oh.